Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving at KQED in San Francisco, California.
And I'm Ken Rudin at NPR in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital.
Ken, it's usually you who is on the road and usually me in Washington, so I'm enjoying the role reversal.
What are you doing out there?
I'm having a good time. I'm seeing my family and I am enjoying the absolutely execrable weather, which is the worst weather in San Francisco I've ever seen, while in Washington it's 80 degrees and sunny. But what about in the sunny Southland? Good weather down there for Rick Santorum.
Yes, but if the name of the game is delegates, and Ron,
delegates.
You and I always joke about this, my understanding there'll be no math on this exam. Math seems to be the guiding factor in who's going to get the nomination.
Okay, who's winning the math?
Well, that's exactly it. The headlines last Tuesday says Rick Santorum wins Alabama and Mississippi. And of course,
which he did.
And
Mitt Romney was third in both those states.
And deserved headlines for Rick Santorum. But at the end of the day, Mitt Romney had more delegates on Tuesday because of victories in Hawaii, in American Samoa. He also won the previous weekend in the Mariana Islands.
When Rick Santorum was winning in Kansas.
In Kansas, so he won overwhelmingly in Kansas. But basically, the headlines are going for Rick Santorum. The delegates, the inexorable ride to 1,144 delegates. Mitt Romney seems to be doing very well with that. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a question whether or not it's truly inexorable. But because that word is so hard to say, let's go back, first of all, and talk a little bit about the delegate numbers themselves. We at NPR are using a hard count. We're only counting the delegates that are truly committed. Therefore, we're not counting any delegates, say, from Iowa or Missouri, because the events that they had there already did not bind any delegates to the winning candidate, which was Rick Santorum in both cases. So some counts, if you go to CNN or some of the other news organizations, they will have imagined those delegates going from Iowa and Missouri primarily to Rick Santorum. But we don't know that's what's going to happen. So if you take a hard count, there really does not seem to be much of a contest here. But if you take a softer count and you try to project who may be getting delegates from some of these other states that haven't had their binding vote yet, well, then Rick Santorum looks a little better.
Yes, but still Mitt Romney has twice as many. I think he has like 51, 52, 53% of the delegates that have been totaled, whether it's the hard count, the more conservative count of NPR, or the AP, which has Romney very close to 500 delegates. The point is that there seems to be a battle here between who is winning the headlines, and certainly Rick Santorum is winning headlines by winning in Alabama and Mississippi. He won big last Saturday in Kansas, and the math, because Mitt Romney, again, on the road to 1,144, Romney's totals keep going up. The point is Romney still has more delegates than his rivals combined, and by anybody's stretch of the calculator, It's kind of hard to make the case that Santorum can surpass Romney in the delegate count. He has to win basically 68% of the remaining delegates, which seems to be very, very difficult.
It's mathematically unlikely, a little bit like at the end of a baseball season when you talk about people being mathematically eliminated.
And mathematically very similar to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton in 2008, when Hillary Clinton was winning some big state victories in Ohio, in New York, in California, in Pennsylvania.
Texas,
right? At the same time, Obama said, look, the numbers favor us. We've gotten a lot of delegates from caucuses, and it's almost mathematically impossible for Hillary Clinton to win the nomination, and he was proven right.
But there was one difference. In 2008, in the Democratic Party, if you were ahead by a little among the delegates, by 100 or so, you had an overwhelming likelihood of winning the superdelegates. And the superdelegates were numerous enough that they really put a big thumb on the scale. So if you came out a little ahead in delegates, the superdelegates were going to line up behind you, especially if you were Barack Obama and you were this historic first-time African-American nominee. And therefore, a small delegate lead was enough to look like a substantial nomination lead, and Hillary Clinton decided not to contest the vote at the convention. There is not as big a mechanism to tilt the balance in the Republican math in 2012.
And let me take your point one step further. Having a small lead in a party that has delegates awarded proportionally means you probably will still maintain that lead. But after April, with a lot of states becoming winner-take-all states, a nominal lead in March could very well become a deficit in April and May.
So while it seems a near mathematical impossibility for Rick Santorum to close the gap, if he remains toe-to-toe with Romney, as we go forward, Does Romney not weaken as the once inevitable nominee who is locked in this death struggle with the previously lightly regarded Rick Santorum? Does the momentum not ever grow for an alternative to Mitt Romney, whose name is Rick Santorum? And here's my last question to you, Ken. What about Newt Gingrich? Why doesn't he get out?
Taking the last question first, I think the big headline of Tuesday was less so much that Rick Santorum won the two states, or that even Mitt Romney, the sensible frontrunner, finished third in both states, but that Newt Gingrich, this was supposed to be his region of the country. Remember, the two states he has won so far, South Carolina and Georgia, his home state of Georgia. And if he was going to win anywhere, why not win in Alabama, Mississippi, where his power base is? But having lost in both of those states, where does he win? Why will voters suddenly say Newt Gingrich, having lost 24 out of 26 contests so far, why do we want to vote for him in the future? And, you know, Gingrich spent Tuesday night talking about the elite media, or the media elite. I don't read Hebrew, so I don't know which was first. But, I mean, the media elite talking about him getting out of the race, but it's conservatives who want him out of the race, or at least Santorum supporters, because they feel that Santorum deserves the opportunity to go one-on-one with Romney.
If I might hazard a guess as to what liberals would prefer, they would prefer that either that somebody continue to cripple Rick Santorum by taking some votes away from him, and he virtually tied him in some parts of Mississippi and Alabama. They would prefer that that go on and enable Mitt Romney, the more moderate candidate, to win the nomination. Or if you want to go further, you know, maybe there are some people who would very much like to just have this contest go on forever because they think it's weakening Republicans. I can't see how it helps liberals in their agenda to have Newt Gingrich continue as a candidate.
Well, except the latter part, if you're a liberal Democrat and you want three candidates to struggle going into the convention, the more candidates there are, the more likelihood that they might be a brokered convention, if you buy that argument. But if you buy the Santorum argument that if Newt Gingrich can't win in Alabama, Mississippi, where can you win? And I, Rick Santorum, has proven not only do I win in the South, but I win in Minnesota and I win in Kansas and perhaps in Missouri. So
he's a heartland candidate. He's not winning anything on the coast. He is, though, the candidate of that segment of the country that is from Colorado all the way east to the states he was winning on Tuesday, and from, as you say, Minnesota all the way down to Mississippi and Alabama. That's a huge chunk of the country he can claim to be his heartland strong base.
It is. Remember when James Carville described Pennsylvania as being a Philadelphia on the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and Alabama in the middle? Well, basically, Rick Santorum is winning the Alabama in the middle because Mitt Romney is winning the urban areas, the big cities. He won
the coasts.
He won very few counties in Ohio, but he won the big cities enough to win. Same with Michigan. He lost most of the counties in Michigan, but enough of the big cities to do well. So obviously, geographically, Rick Santorum is doing, you know, far better than Mitt Romney. But Mitt Romney, as he said the other day, he said, look, I still got a million more votes than anybody else in this race. This is not the uber rich. This is not the establishment. These are true voters if I have a million more votes than the opposition.
Or maybe there are just more true establishment uber-rich than we had ever imagined. But let's just make one more observation about geography and particularly the Newt Gingrich campaign. He had won, as you said, South Carolina and Georgia. Those are two of the five states, adding in Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, that were really the hardcore of the Deep South, the states that voted for Strom Thurmond, that voted for Barry Goldwater in 1964, and George Wallace in 1968. Not all five for all three of those candidates, but basically that was the hardcore base. And these states needed to go for Newt Gingrich if he was going to portray himself as the regional candidate who could go to the convention and represent a region. He's now lost two out of four. If he doesn't win in Louisiana, it becomes, well, and I believe it will be, the null set for Newt Gingrich. And he is going on in this contest not as a candidate, but just as a voice, just as a personality, just as somebody who wants to be heard from and perhaps is trying to broker some kind of special recognition at the Tampa convention. He's no longer in any sense viable for the nomination.
Look, at some point he's going to have to win something, and I agree with you. March 24th, the Saturday primary in Louisiana is crucial. But, you know, we keep saying this over and over again. Florida is crucial for Romney. He's got to win it, so he wins it, but nothing changes. Michigan is crucial for Romney. Ohio is crucial for Romney. He's got to win it, so he wins it, but nothing changes. I don't even feel that Mitt Romney is any stronger as a front runner today than he was prior to Super Tuesday when he won 6 out of the 10.
That's right, and that's a media prejudice. We much prefer a surprise story. We much prefer the story of the underdog than just another ho-hum collected stamp for Mitt Romney and his big book of stamp collection. But Ken, don't you want to say that it's absolutely crucial what's happening this weekend in Puerto Rico?
Well, yes, because everything is a day-by-day momentum builder.
And how about Illinois on Tuesday? Isn't that absolutely crucial for Mitt Romney to right his ship and get back out in the lead?
The answer is absolutely yes. And we talk about how maybe money is overrated. And yet, look at Illinois. In 4 of the 18 congressional districts, there is no Santorum presence. He didn't have the wherewithal or the organization to file delegates in Illinois in 4 of the 18. And so, just as we saw in Virginia, where Santorum didn't compete, whereas we saw in other states where he didn't have enough delegate strength, Santorum could be doing even better than he is, but because of organizational or monetary shortages, he's not up to the task. And we may see that in Illinois.
There have been some polls that have shown that voters actually are paying attention now to this money issue. And maybe it's not being overrated, at least in the sense that maybe voters are beginning to pay some attention to the kind of people who give money to candidates and then drive our politics, that people have sort of noticed that there's been a change in the way campaigns are financed and that super PACs are driving the train, and that maybe the Supreme Court's last decision regarding all of this has finally taken us back to a Wild West era in which anything is okay, and people are a little bothered by that.
Maybe yes, maybe no. There seems to be an indication that voters are very upset about the super PACs, the multimillionaires who are coming in and rescuing candidates. Of course, as people have pointed out, when George Soros and others came in with $50 million to defeat President Bush in 2004, there didn't seem to be this hue and cry about money in politics from the left, at least. I think it depends on where the money is coming from. And also, I mean, if everybody says super PACs are so bad, but then you have President Obama saying, you know what, I might as well join that group too. And I think you lose a purity if there's such a thing like that in politics. But Obama loses the argument about money in politics when he says, well, look, you know, I might as well do what everybody else is doing. Why fight with one arm behind my back? I'll be for the super PACs as well. And we saw Tim Kaine, the Senate hopeful in Virginia, who also established a super PAC. I think super PACs may sound bad in a lot of people's minds, but that's the name of the game. And I think both parties are playing it pretty well.
Speaking of President Obama, some mixed news for him in the polls this week. Some polls showing him up in the high 40s. One poll from the Pew Research Center even showing him at 50%, and he hadn't been there in the Pew poll in quite some time. But one poll is at least 6 points lower than all the others, 10 points lower than some of the polls, and it's one in which President Obama has normally or usually done rather well, the CBS New York Times poll, and they've got him all the way down to 41% approval. That's dangerous territory, to put it mildly, for an incumbent president, and not entirely clear in terms of its origin. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, that is very interesting. And this is the thing that fascinates me about these polls. A month ago, when some 200,000 jobs or so were created and President Obama's numbers were about 50% in the same New York Times, CBS News poll, he was at 50%. Everybody said, wow, the economy's coming back. He's doing really well. He's going to win this thing. And now this week, when the same poll has the president with 41% approval, 47% disapproval, we say, obviously the president is in big trouble. It's the high cost of gasoline. It's the mess in Afghanistan. It's God knows what's going to happen in the Mideast with Iran and Israel. So, you know, nothing has really happened in the intervening month, except for the fact that the poll looks much more discouraging for the president. So I don't know what happens. I think we react too quickly to these kind of polls. Last month, oh my goodness, Obama looks great. This month, he's in big, big trouble. You know, given the fact that the Republicans are eating their own and they're doing all these things to sabotage any opportunity they can to win in November, and yet I think they forget the fact that Obama could be very, very vulnerable. There's still 8.3% unemployment. There's still dissatisfaction with the job he's doing on the economy and in foreign affairs. And if the Republicans paid any attention, they could realize, well, maybe this is why the Republican nomination is so crucial and so hard-fought, because it may be very valuable to have.
There's also, of course, the problem that some of their best candidates or potentially best candidates didn't get in the first place because they believed that the president's polls would come back, and that did presidents usually get a second term, not always, but usually, and they didn't think that this was that ripe an opportunity. That's part of the reason this was not the strongest Republican field that it might have been for 2012. So obviously that, too, has gone up and down. And if the economy continues to improve, and if we don't get into some sort of a shooting war with Iran, it is possible that even such a mess as Afghanistan, which got a great deal worse since our last podcast. I don't think we were entirely responsible, but it did get a great deal uglier for the American mission in Afghanistan with the massacre there and with the attempted retaliation against Secretary Panetta as he went there to visit. This is not a popular mission. It never probably has been. More and more Americans telling pollsters they'd like to see us get out. I don't know, though, if that's a killer issue for Barack Obama in November, or for that matter, if gas prices are a killer issue for Barack Obama, unless something happens to completely convince people that both Afghanistan and high gas prices are completely his fault.
But the thing with Afghanistan is very fascinating to me. You see a lot of Republicans and Republican candidates saying, maybe this mission is ridiculous, and you have the Democratic administration say, look, we're not going to do anything drastic, we're not going to change anything. This sounds exactly the role reversal of what was going on in Iraq in 2006 when the Democratic candidates in 2007, 2008 were saying how horrific and how pointless the war in Iraq was and how the Bush administration was saying we got to stay the course.
Excellent point. Role reversal one more time, one more trip around the merry-go-round with respect to who's in responsible power and who claims that something more should be done. You know, when you take us back a few years like that, Ken, it does get my nostalgia going. And there's a big nostalgia story for me in the news this week. You know, I grew up in Chicago. And when I was a kid in Chicago, we all dreamed of going to Colorado for a vacation. The idea was that we'd go out there, out to the mountains. And, you know, the longer we could stay, the luckier we thought we were.
Well, yeah, you're talking about former governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, who this week went to a prison around Denver for 14 years for corruption.
Now, we should explain why he's going to Colorado to go to prison when he was convicted for crimes he committed in Illinois. It's a federal crime, and they assign him to the appropriate level of incarceration, the appropriate level of security at one of the many federal facilities around the country. It doesn't need to be anywhere near where the crimes were committed.
Right. But somebody actually still in Illinois who has been suspected of some kind of corruption is Jesse Jackson Jr. And since we're talking about Illinois, next Tuesday's primary is not only presidential, but it's congressional as well. And Jesse Jackson Jr. has a primary in his Chicago-based district, African-American majority district. Debbie Halverson, the former congresswoman, white congresswoman who served one term from 2008 to 2010. But despite the whispers about some kind of ethics investigation going on with Jesse Jackson Jr., despite the whispers about his private life, which came out in embarrassing ways, by all standards, money raised, the polls, Jesse Jackson Jr. looks like he's a shoo-in in Tuesday's primary against Halverson. But one Republican who will not be returned to Congress is the battle between Adam Kinzinger, the freshman Republican who's challenging Don Manzullo, another incumbent, in a combined district where the Democrats redrew the lines in Illinois, lumping these two Republicans together. And that's been a pretty ugly battle as well, if something could be pretty ugly.
I salute you, Ken. You are clearly the Sultan of Segway. You know, Ken, we've spent time on a couple, three of my putative home states this week.
What do you, Mitt Romney?
I think we really ought to give you a shot at one of yours, New York, where Bob Turner, the pride of the House delegation, who had his district eliminated in the latest remapping, has decided to run statewide and introduce the entire state to Bob Turner.
Well, Bob Turner, of course, is the one who won the seat vacated by Anthony Weiner, and it was a big shocker. It was the first Republican to win that seat since the 1920s when he won the open seat mostly in Queens, part of Brooklyn, and completely unexpected. But as lawmakers in Albany eradicated his congressional district, he's looking for someplace else to run. He had really no good options, and so why not run against Kirsten Gillibrand for the Senate? He's only been in Congress for less than a year. This would be a pretty shocking thing, and conservatives have already said that they like some other candidates. So, you know, Kirsten Gillibrand, who was appointed to Hillary Clinton's seat, she won a special election in 2010. She's running again in 2012. Again, looks like a solid choice to get reelected, and New York, like California, seems to be dead end for Republican Senate hopefuls. Since Al D'Amato, the Republicans have been shut out in New York, and Republicans haven't won a Senate race in California since Pete Wilson in 1988.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
Ron, before we go, a passing that I want to mention. A lot of the listeners don't always get to hear the stuff that we say during the podcast, but invariably, Ron Elving and I will do Fire Sign Theater shtick in the middle of the podcast. Sometimes our producers let us keep it in. Sometimes it gets out because it makes no sense to them, although it makes sense to Ron and me. Anyway, the point of all this is Peter Bergman, one of the founders of Fire Sign Theater, died this week at the age of 72. And there were some albums, Daddy, what's a record album? There were some albums in 1969, 1970 that were just so over the top, and we would sit and listen to it with our record players and say, oh my goodness, this is brilliant stuff. They were big influences on my life, and Peter Bergman's passing should not be left unmentioned in the podcast.
He will be fondly remembered. And that is it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving at KQED in San Francisco.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Washington, D.C.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Safe travels, Ron.
Thank you, Ken. Goodbye, Peter.
4G, firefighter, he's a student like you. If you're looking for a captain of the ring ball team, you can bet he won't be there.
Hiya, friends. Ralph's Sportsport. Ralph's Sportsport Motors, the world's largest new used and used automobile dealership. Ralph's Sportsport Motors here in the city of emphysema.
Oh, Nick, where
darling,
am I?
Nick, wake up. Are you all right?
Yes.
Oh, then stop slapping me.
Hey in there. Open up. Your door knocker fell off.
Watch all this brouhaha.
Brouhaha? Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, 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 ha. Ha, ha, ha.